Welcome to Uber Cube. This is the podcast where we discuss all things cube, but with refreshments. This is your host, Anthony Adams, a.k.a. Uber Bear, and I'm joined by...
Stu. How about I sort of promote the Twitter as well? So it's at Stu, at just Stu MTG. So
yeah.
I'm embracing the
Justin. He has dug in, and as a counterpoint to all my arguments, he has decided to put the word just in front of him, which is a moniker in just itself. We're not going to accept that together. we will agree to disagree. Sure. Yeah. So anyways, before we get into this episode, we're going to do the thing that we always do here at UberCube, going to feature our drink of the pod. Stu and I just so happen to be having something similar. I'll let Stu take a struggle at this. Let's see how he translates the word Appalachian. That's the sound. Try Appalachian.
All right. So this is an Appalachian Mountain Brewery. Don't even try it. AMB, Appalachian Mountain Brewery, and it's the Longleaf IPA. And I'm excited to crack this one and get cracking.
Let's give it a whirl.
All right.
There we go.
All right. Good stuff.
Give this a sample.
All right. So I tend to say this a lot, but I'm really excited for this episode because our showcase for this one is a bit of a baby of mine, a bit of a favorite.
There you go. And we're going to talk about opposition. We're going to name this episode Opposing the Opposition just to make it a little bit more fun. But basically, we're going to break down the standalone card known as Opposition that's both loved and hated, loathed and all the things in both Commander, Cubes, and I guess pretty much any format that you can jam it into.
Yeah, I think it's come up. The card has been mentioned in a couple of our previous episodes, but it's one of those, it's super strong, and it's really, really not fun if you're on the other side.
Once it starts ticking, it's pretty bad. You're on a clock of misery at that point.
Because yes, you are.
Say goodbye to all your resources.
It's just, I want to cast my spells, man. Why can't I cast my spells?
Why can't I play too?
I got all these pretty cards in my hand. I want to use them.
So we're going to cover what the card Opposition does before we get going for those people who may or may not be familiar. So the art on this, before we even get going, is absolutely gorgeous. There's two of them that are well known, but this one in particular is it's Urza basically arguing, I guess, with his counterpart. Do you know who this other person is? I'm sure someone out in the world.
Like Gideon to me.
It's not Gideon.
It kind of looks like this.
Is the Brothers War. I'm not the best at the lore.
I don't know anything about the lore.
Yeah, well, it's Urza versus, and I'll be glad to redact that if I am incorrect. But it does say, Urza says, he's saying, perhaps, but measures of sanity among planeswalkers are hard to come by, Baron. Anywho, Opposition as a card is an enchantment, and it costs 2 blue and 2 colorless. And what you get is the ability to tap an untapped creature you control, tap artifact, creature, or land. And it doesn't say opponent. You can pretty much do this with anything.
There's
some pretty jank stuff you can do here.
Yes, indeed. As well as some very devastatingly oppressive things.
I mean, just to go off the rails in some commander situation, you could tap down your Howling Mind, for example.
You could.
So that they don't get that action and only you do. Right at the end of the last player's instep.
Yep, you can tap down.
A little silly.
Another one that we talked about on a previous episode, Winter Orb. I don't know if that was part of the show notes.
No, that had not crossed my brain.
That's kind of a favorite of mine is get both of these bad boys out and
You are evil.
Yes. So
Opposition is found in 12.5% of cubes as per Cube Cobra, which equals 6,943. That's a lot of cubes.
It is.
I mean, this is a fantastic card. I am glad to have found that this is in so many out there in the world.
I think the popularity of resource denial, stacksy kind of strategies, again, something we talked about in a previous episode. We have a whole episode about stacks. If you're interested in that as an archetype and you're not familiar with that episode, then go check it out. It's a great listen. As I think the numbers suggest, this is a popular kind of strategy that a card like Opposition fits with.
And I'm sure the world, again, may or may not agree with my next statement, but I believe that it's a card that can go into multiple types of cubes. Yes, powered is probably where it truly needs to be, but if you were doing like an enchantment that had enough heavy density of removal, mm-hmm. or you had some kind of thematic cube, you could do stuff with this. There's a lot of, in a world of Commander, for example, it hasn't broken the table. Most of the time it's used to
It's much harder to tap down the lands of three players, right? Unless you're really swarming the battlefield with a ton of little creatures somehow.
And 1v1, this can actually get away from you pretty quick, right?
That's where
it shines. Right. You can take down their whatever version of lands they can running. Anything from a shock land to we're getting down silly down to a bounce land or something like that, right?
Yeah, and it can make it punishing. Yeah, I do agree. It does fit in a lot of cubes. I think it's definitely a card that must be very carefully on the watch list at all times. Right?
Similar I wouldn't to just go jamming this in.
No, and we've talked about this with other cubes where, you know, you've got to be so careful with some of those super powerful cards, right? Planeswalkers are kind of ones that stick out.
Right.
Planeswalkers just shoved in because they fit the theme or they fit the color can be really devastating. And just, you don't want those single cards. It's like, I'm going to pick this up. If it's pack three and I have no fixing, I'm still going to pick up a card like this just because of how game warping it is.
And you can build around this card. So before we even get going, though, Stu and I had a kind of a pre-pod discussion, and I have declared this card, even though it is basically two pip blue and two colorless to cast it.
Yep.
In my mind, it's actually a secret Simic card. Basically, Simic just has the best shell in my mind with all the mana dorks, the Llanowar elves, etc.
Yep.
That just give you the creature count, because that's the kicker here is you must tap one of your creatures in order to tap down one of their resources, mm-hmm. either their creature, their land, or an artifact,
yep.
right? And or yours. So you must. So density of creatures really plays into this idea.
Yeah, it determines the power level of the card for sure.
Correct. So, Stu, if you wouldn't mind covering over the kind of the groupings that it pairs well with, please.
Yeah. So this is our pairs well with section that we're going to cover first of all. So tempo strategies, right? Azorius.
Right.
You're just, as any tempo deck would suggest, you're trying to out-tempo, I suppose, it says on the tin, so to speak. You're trying to just advance your board and just continually lock them down. Pretty much how the card works in general. But I think in an Azorius strategy where you have sort of already oppressive cards, then it can just be really devastating to have cards. You know, Winter Orb, we talked about where you can only untap one land. That can make it even more impossible. But then ways to slow your opponents down with things like Thalia, Guardian of Thraben. That's kind of a popular one that comes up.
Right.
Lodestone Golem, right? I'm already making it more difficult for you to cast non-artifact spells. Now it's making it even more difficult for you to cast spells at all. Is it Spells Matters? Right?
Sure.
Ways to generate tokens.
Like, yeah, we've talked about a lot, Young Peasy.
Young Peasy, baby.
Right, or any of these other creatures like the Mystic, what were we talking about
Murmuring
before?
Mystic.
The Murmuring Mystic, etc. Yep. These kind of cards can kind of just make the shell even more powerful.
Yep. We talked about Talrand as well, right? In one of our previous.
Right.
I actually have a Talrand EDH deck that's not complete, I don't think. But you can only imagine if you're able to get like the first three or four turns under your belt and start casting a bunch of instants and sorceries with him on the field, all of a sudden you can generate enough of those tokens. You don't need to lock down everybody in a four-player EDH game, right? Sometimes it's just about locking down one player. Again, going back to the strategy of how strong it is in a one-on-one environment, imagine you've got enough resources to start really locking down all the
right. So, and one thing that we kind of skipped over here, and this is going to be for people who are new to this idea, the way you're going to play this card is whenever they move to their untap and during their upkeep, you then respond and you tap down their resource, taking them off of that. So when they move to the next phase, that's no longer a resource that can be utilized because
exactly.
the phase change has occurred.
Yep.
So it's just something on a timing matter. Now, that's not the only time you have to use this. You can actually use this to bum rush in attacks, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very strategic. It's any kind of it's an enchantment that essentially turns your creatures into tap effects, like in concept, right? If we had to have an analogous idea that plays into this at a lower power.
Yep.
The next one it kind of plays into, and this is a bit of a reach, would be the, it's not so much Golgari, but it would be like Sultai Control, right? You could have the Bitter Blossoms, the Pack Rats, etc., or Dimir Control, rather. I mean, any of that kind of subgrouping, because it's this card in particular, and I'm going to continue to reiterate during this episode, it performs best when you have high creature density.
That is optimal.
Although
for sure.
It's optimal, although Stu has pointed out, and I'll let him make his point, it's not necessary. There are circumstances where it's not the only method to play this.
It's not. It's strategic. Exactly. Like, and I understand the point that you're making, right? If you've got the most optimum sort of board state, you've got enough creatures to just perpetually lock down your opponent. Every time their upkeep turns around, you're tapping down every single land because you've dropped Avenger of Zendikar, for example, right?
Right.
Or, you know, some kind of token maker that allows you to just continually tap down all the lands. But sometimes, again, going back to the tempo side of things, sometimes you don't need to tap down five or six lands. Sometimes just tapping down one or two lands
is strategic enough.
It's so strong,
right,
that you're taking them off, you know, being able to cast anything meaningful.
It's a compliment of that or a counterpoint, though, because this costs four mana. It is an investment. I want to optimize just based on the pure cost alone in the highest powered environments. Yep. If I were to step down my environment's power level, then obviously it would translate more to, like we said before, a Gideon's Lawkeeper, but it also translates to like a Rashad and Port type effect, right? You just kind of, you take them off the color you need to, because this isn't something you really want to wait to that critical mass of creatures have developed.
Exactly.
The next pairings that go well with this is, and I mean, it's going to be green token strategies, right? Like, and I put in my example squirrels because I just have this huge fascination with squirrels in my two-headed giant cube that the squirrel aristocrats is real. It's real. But what you want to end up on that strategy is you basically build up this large economy of squirrels in front of you, or this army, and then you can top it off with a crater hoof behemoth or something along those lines.
Yeah,
right?
Finale, whatever.
The razor boar that goes in and attacks, you know, it's something, mm-hmm. any kind of thing that goes in and just buffs them, like a finale devastation, etc. But this is just to keep them off their resources while you build up this kind of this tiny little army, right?
Yep.
Another one that I have in here is interesting is Goblin Bombardment and other sack decks. I mean, you could reach here, and I know I'm going a little bit outside the spectrum of high performance, right? Again, we talked about in this case, Simic is the, in my opinion, the creme de la creme of this archetype, if you right. will, right? But you could actually tap a goblin, tap down their land, you know, a sack with it, etc., right? Having that type of sack outlet effect where you can both tap down and punish will be interesting in a weird, janky...
It's funky and weird.
And then that just ties right into aristocrats, too. And I know this is getting reachy because everybody's... The old man yelling at the clouds right now is like, grr, right? But the perfect situation is obviously using your mana dorks and tapping down stuff, and you get mana and they don't. However, there are janky ways in which you can play this card. It may be dangerous. That was the word of caution that Stu and I threw out there in the beginning of
it. Yeah, it's just such a strong effect that even if you're not playing it optimally, it's probably going to be enough in the right shell.
Right. And then the last one that rolls up well is obviously it's creature producing planeswalkers. I mean, planeswalkers are essentially not only guarding themselves, but you're allowing your loyalty counters to tick up while you're taking out, i.e. either their creatures with your creatures. You don't even have to go into combat.
Yep.
You don't have to. Your 3-3 doesn't have to fight that 7-7 now.
No. Just, can you imagine, like, you
it's
get...
It's disgusting.
Yeah, you get the right draw. You get two ticks on Big Elspeth, and you've got 6/1s, and you can just start tapping everything down.
They're not playing that.
It might feel a little bit
cost you 10 mana. You are way beyond win more at that point in the highest of environments. But as you power down, so the win more word that we use often, it's kind of just a choice that he and I choose to label words on occasion.
Yeah,
but it's only as if you're kind of showcasing or you're dancing in front of your opponent a little bit. But there are certain instances where Winmore really crosses that line into win con. That's that we talked about this in a previous episode.
Exactly,
but it's got that fine line. So I want to mm-hmm. be very clear on that.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's kind of the pairs well with, which virtually is everything that makes creatures in a long-winded way, right? Yes.
Unless you're playing Storm, which, you know, probably not going to be quite as effective.
Stu, would you mind taking on the strengths of the card that we're going to call a package opposition?
Yeah, so fun?
Yes.
Should I just leave it at that?
What do you got?
It's like really, really...
Position. I love it.
Yeah, I don't know if the Dallas Stars cheerleaders are going to be behind your opponent when you're putting this out on the battlefield, but
no, they will not.
It's pretty fun. You know, in a control strategy where you do have even and again, I will say this, you don't need to have the high density of creatures, just enough creatures to impact the board long right. enough to either slow your opponent down or to advance your own board well enough that you can just start steamrolling the game.
And then that brings a point, because as we're moving to the strengths, is this is a deck that's very oriented around time. There's a point where if you don't time this correctly, or you're spending so much time trying to shut down your opponent that you're also shutting down yourself because you've lost you've lost that. You're not gaining. You need to keep momentum on your side, yes, of the field. Else this card is literally just putting you both at parity.
Yeah, you need either a good density of counter magic, or you need to, you know, improve the number of tokens that you have or creatures that you have if you want to deny them resources. Or, you know, maybe you just want to put board wipes in there.
Right.
Maybe I've developed my board enough. I got some planeswalkers. I'm happy now to lose all my creatures because I'm just going to win on the back of what I have.
And I'm
going to
keep you locked down, right? The next one is, and we've already kind of stated this, is it 100% supports token strategies. Now, I, as a curator, have not chosen to add this, for example, to my two-headed giant cube, because that cube is all about fun, very commander-centric in its janky play styles. And yeah. I don't want to interject this into that environment. Well, because I don't want one person to be tapping down as the support mechanism and the other person attacking in, although it sounds fun on one side of the field, I want players to sit down again for the second time, right? So I have to be mindful. I think this actually plays a little better from a sportsmanship standpoint, believe it or not, in 1v1 sometimes. If you had a partner, it would feel a little bullyish almost. And I know that's a reach for a game, but that can happen in a game. And I don't want the truffle shuffle on the other side of the table while the other two people are really mad and their beer's flat. You know, I'm not looking for that type of game. This is one that we talked about. It's not single threaded. It's almost supports in every shell. Again, it basically costs 4 mana value total, right? So that's a reachy statement, but I mean, it depends on the speed at which your environment rolls at, right? In the powered environments, this is a card you slap down as fast as possible. You don't play around. We're not going to sit around, you know, doing the truffle shuffle dancing in front of everybody.
Exactly.
You're literally going to get down those dorks. You're going to use the dorks to ramp through as fast as possible. You're going to take any pain you can to ramp this as quickly as tempoed as quick, and then start locking them down during their upkeep or at post their untap step during their turn.
Yeah.
And then at that point, it's misery on the stack. Now, your opponent is going to struggle to remove that. That's why, although, counterpoint to my own self, because I do that sometimes, is that's where the mana efficiency of cards have come into play. There's a lot of cards out there now that can deal with this at a much cleaner rate. You don't have to pay the threes or the twos, even for the naturalizes. We can get into even more efficient stuff,
like
fragmentization, which that might be for 3 CMC, but you get where I'm going with this.
Yeah, and I will say that the not single-threaded and the fact that it is such a good support card is why this card is so strong and so highly regarded, right?
You
don't need to limit yourself in what you play. And you also don't need to limit yourself, again, going back to, you don't need to tap every land. You don't need to tap every single creature. You just need to tap the important stuff.
Right. And then this next point, if Stu, you wouldn't mind taking this on, this was kind of a reiteration of our pre-pod kind of discussion.
Yeah, just the way that it plays well into all the colors, right? Maybe not necessarily in a mono blue shell. I would say that it's still powerful, even in mono blue. I think mono blue has a presence that can make it strong, but I would certainly agree that, you know, green, obviously fantastic for
more
the dorks.
Density.
Red can produce tokens. Black can produce tokens.
Right.
White can have dense creatures that also provide value.
Blue is the least creature dense section in using my particular 540 powered cube and having looked at others.
Let's clarify that in the powered cube.
Yeah, I did say power cube because I haven't put this in any other of my cubes.
Yeah.
I feel like this card might be a little bit of a health danger to some of my cubes. Even though I'm telling everyone else to put it everywhere, you know, go do whatever you want. But in my other 4 cubes, the cubes themselves told me no.
Yeah.
Please, Dad, don't do that. Yes. So I have listened.
And that kind of leads into the next one, right? Fits in a lot of shells.
Yeah.
Again, Timic Control, Tempo, Izzet, Grixis, Esper, you know, Aristocrat strategies, Ramp strategies.
You can go nuts.
Any kind of token strategies. Anything where you've got enough creatures.
Super friends.
To impact the board. Super friends.
Doesn't matter, right?
Yep.
But optimally, it's looking for those Llanowar Elves type creatures.
Great.
It's a perfect situation. Now I'm going to move over to the weaknesses, and I'll cover this one. Spoiler alert, the limited redundancy. It is opposition.
Right.
The two old men yelling at the clouds, pointing at one another, arguing on a beach, whatever they're doing, I don't know. A lot like Wildfire and Burning of Xin Yi, I mean, you just don't have a lot of options, and it's probably it's probably for the best.
Yeah,
this doesn't need.
You don't want multiple effects like this that you can build around. Like, I'm going to draft the 4 oppositions. Like, no. One is enough.
It can lead to lockdown games. If you're if you don't show good sportsmanship during something like this, which, you know, sometimes I'm...
Are you suggesting that I concede?
I'm saying that, no, I've tried to remove that from my vernacular. We're going to do a whole episode because on that statement. No, I will not. I will say through good sportsmanship, this is a card that could lead to field bads.
Sure.
It's just something that you have to be cognizant of. You're sitting across the table because, you know, as all Magic players, we are just passionate individuals.
We want to win.
We want to win, but we also, as a curator, you want to kind of see everybody have a chance. Maybe the players don't feel that feels, but as a curator, I feel that on the side of the table. So if I'm doing this opposition thing to a person and they just getting pinned down and they look miserable, I am cognizant of that.
Yeah. Which sounds a bit crazy.
Which because... I'll bring a box of tissues for the next game.
That's absolutely sad.
That was awful.
But, you know, it's right though, right? You talked about, you know, how you like to be kind of a bit of the fun police. You enjoy the stacks archetypes,
destroying lands,
all that kind of stuff. But not everybody is, right? Some people just like to play creatures and turn them sideways. Some people like a much more complex archetype. So, yeah, I think you need to be...
This is a good opportunity saying don't gloat when playing a game if you're winning.
I never gloat.
Sportsmanship matters.
I never gloat.
I've gotten better at it.
I don't
think I'm ex-military. They teach you to be a little overly confident sometimes. I am asking for forgiveness. All right.
You got it.
So the next one's going to be kind of, this one's the opposing token strategies. I mean, if they have enough creature count and they're getting out there fast enough, I mean, I could say this with anything, right? Some opposing strategies simply won't care. They're just going to come at you fast. Aggro is going to come at you fast. Storm might be able to get in faster than you. Yep. Any of these turn ones, anything that's just dropping stuff quickly. Because again, this costs you four to get on the board. So if you didn't use Crypt or something to cheat this out, or your Soul Ring or whatever you're running, right? Yep. You run that risk of, you know, falling behind. So you don't... What I do like about this, though, strategy, as we're in the weaknesses, is that opposition is not... Well, we're going to call it a defining archetype. It's not. It doesn't have to be the core strategy. At the end of the day, I mean, you're ramping into something huge because you're running mana dorks or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You're not explicitly held down by this win con.
No, but you are sort of complicating things with it a little bit, maybe, because, you know, you have to tap one of your creatures to tap one of their lands. Or you could tap a creature, or you could tap... So now you've got decisions to make, right? Okay, do I want them to put any more creatures on the battlefield? Because I kind of feel like I'm under pressure right now. So I could deny them the opportunity.
And then you let them have the land, so they open up the bank again.
Or do I let them swing?
Yeah,
what do I care more about? Them adding more to the battlefield? Or do I care more about...
It does create a little bit of internal conflict as you being the opposition player until you get it fully online. Once it's fully online, I mean, you're just watching them.
But that's kind of a bit of a unicorn, I want to think, right? It's rare either you're playing against the deck that's struggling or your deck just completely has popped off, right? You've dumped a bunch of tokens. You've got the fast mana. You're able to deny them resources. But this can be a struggle against decks that are able to establish their own board presence quite quickly.
And then additional weaknesses, and this is you know, just thoughts that I had. Sometimes I just blurt these out. But like, prefers tokens that enter the battlefield without combat. What I mean is, like, it doesn't want you to bring in a Brimaz and then wait for you to get that. Like, that's a whole different archetype in itself, right? Yeah. I mean, these are things that are going to be static. When they enter the battlefield, they don't have to have haste. You're not intending... This deck's not about haste. This deck is kind of a long game type of strategy.
Yeah, you're trying to slow the game down.
Yeah, we called it tempo before, but this is a 100% a control-y mechanism, right? It's control generation. But you could support it with, like, over-the-top tempo type stuff.
I mean, it
blends well. And then here's another one, too, and not to sugarcoat it, that's bad for it, is enchantment removal. I mean, spoiler alert, it is an enchantment. So you should have your E-Wits, because E-Wits plays exceptionally well with this card, because anything that has a spent ETB is now tap fodder for this, you know, horrible machine or machina that you have now designed on the other side of the table. And then wraths. I mean, you're trying to build up all these creatures, any kind of wrath spot removals that are taking out you. I mean, that's not only hurting your resource, you know, idea that you were overly invested in, right? Confidence as you're brewing up this horrible opposition attack that you're about to do upon your opponent. But I mean, they just wrath out, right? And they've kind of set it back to zero. The clock is off again. They can get back online.
Yep.
And then control. I mean, some of these are probably just screaming obvious to a lot of people listening, right?
Yeah, but it's important to mention, right? Four mana.
It's
an incredibly powerful effect.
Mana Drain will gobble that, and then they got four mana. And then what was the point of you even running an opposition strategy that was single threaded? So you don't, opposition, I have a habit of doing this when I build this deck sometimes. Like, I'm over going, I got opposition. I'm going to get all this stuff for opposition. And then I forget the fact that I need to win still, too. I'm so worried about, like, how can I make Stu just lock down on this other table? Because that's for the lulls, you know, the sportsmanship thing I'm working on, opposed to actually trying to get across the table and win the game.
Yes.
Right?
Winning is important.
Someone so that's where these cards get a little weird, right? It falls into that stacks type of mentality. Let's see what else we got. And we said it before, you know, cards that support opposition. Stu, would you mind taking on this group here?
Yeah, please? Again, tokens, probably the best and easiest example, yeah. Right? Get a bunch of creatures, tap a bunch of lands, win. Spent enter the battlefield, right? Yeah. Very, very nice to have. Reclamation Sage, blow up, whatever. Right. Wall of Omens, get a card, right? So anything that's giving you residual value on top of the value of opposition,
right?
Really, really nice. Creatures that generally do not attack for large amounts of damage.
Snapcaster Mage, like, that's an example of a card you mentioned earlier. If you're going through and you're doing some kind of counter magic to slow them down, then Snapcaster Mage, it's a 2-1 body. But there's a point in the game where that's no longer serviceable, right? Then it kind of becomes the Gideon's Lawkeeper of the opposition train at that point.
That very much depends. I think there are certainly decks that you could build where you've got a bunch of other nonsense to control the game, and maybe you just want to swing with Snapcaster Mage for two.
Let's break down some cards by color here that kind of just do well with this. And, you know, not all of these are going to be the perfect optimal plays, but I thought it best that when we're listing these out, that if you're looking through your card collection, you're like, hey, I got an opposition, I have this card, even if it's for Commander, I mean, you could float this into an Azorius deck or Bant or whatever it is you wanted to do. Yeah. So, I mean, this idea works right here, right?
Yeah, and I think the first one on this list, one, because I love it so much right. In mono-white aggro decks, is Bladesplicer.
Yeah.
Human Artificer, 2 colorless, 1 white for a 1/1. And when it enters the battlefield, you get a 3/3 colorless Golem artifact creature token, and Golem creatures you control have first strike. If you're able to get this down early,
yeah.
First of all, you're swinging for 3 damage first strike. And then
the one one's no good to you, nor do you want it to die.
No.
It's not a serviceable attacker. It's a support card. So that feeds right into that opposition. So now you use that, you know, in this case, you tap down their creature to allow your Golem to go through.
Yeah.
Making first strike not even really the needed thing. You're hitting for 3 is value engine, right? Yep,
exactly.
I mean, so that card plays cleanly into this idea. I mean, I would just splash this there in a heartbeat.
Yep.
The next one I'll cover is Elspeth, Knight Errant, and for basically 2 planes and 2 colorless, you get a 4 loyalty planeswalker, Elspeth. Her +1 is put a 1/1 white soldier creature token onto the battlefield.
Nice.
The rest of it's +1. Target creature gets +3/+3 and gains flying until the end of turn. And then she has an emblem that basically says your artifacts, it's -8, your artifacts, creatures, enchantments, and land control gain indestructible. That's not really relevant. It's more about the token generation in this situation. You would do kind of the handoff that we just did a minute ago with the Blade Splicer, where you would drop the 1/1 down because it doesn't have haste. Use that as your tap mechanism to remove said creature from combat, and hopefully you have another one, like, I don't know, we'll say a Llanowar Elves or whatever, if you're doing Bant, and you would then put the +3/+3 on that and flying, and you can attack with that.
I was going to say exactly that, right? The fact, one thing that's beautiful about Elspeth, right, the +1 is put a 1/1 soldier out there,
right?
It's also +1 to give the creature +3/+3 and flying, right? So you've got that indoor protection,
right?
Engine for your opposition, and a finisher.
Right, so you can kind of go back and forth. It's a dueling banjo. You choose which one of those loyalties
you need.
But both of them play into this, you know, get it out of the way, tap them down, finish the game.
Exactly.
The next one I'll let Stu cover, because this is a favorite of his, and I don't know if we even cover this extensively.
Yeah, and this is another one that really doesn't need a whole lot of introduction. This is Monastery Mentor, 2 colorless, 1 white for a human monk, 2/2. Has prowess, which gives it +1/+1 when you cast a non-creature spell until end of turn. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a 1/1 white monk creature token with prowess onto the battlefield. Monastery Mentor, one of the all-time legendary cube cards, and has seen tons of playing constructed environments as well. What a great opposition card, though, right? You control things on their turn, you get the creatures, you tap them down, super strong.
It does create a little bit of conflict, though, as we're reading out loud and I'm thinking about it. So this is almost like an aggro-type creature. It's an aggro-tempo creature.
Sure.
So opposition in itself is almost a control shell by slowing them down. It gets in that weird, you have to know when you're spending too much time trying to, you know, oppose your opponent and bring them to off of the resources, instead of actually moving forward on the fight. Is your army actually moving?
That's one of the things that I love so much about this card, though, is that you have the flexibility to choose which turn you also do it on.
You could play a spell, make the person tap down the thing all during their upkeep.
Absolutely.
And get her done.
During their combat phase. Maybe they bring a hasty creature in on their main phase, whatever the case may be.
All right. So our next one we're going to do, this is these are some token generators that, you know, I'm not running all of these any longer. At one point I ran Secure the Waste, which is for one planes and X, you get to put X 1/1 white warrior creature tokens onto the battlefield. I mean, it is what it is. It makes these tokens. You can now use these to basically keep them locked down.
Yeah. And again, how much do you really think that you need to cast this for in order for it to be powerful enough to be very impactful?
This
right?
is really
you,
gross. To
you actually, may only need two or three of these.
This
tokens.
Is the spell that you kind of hold up a little bit. And then as they go to their untap step or before their untap step, this is when you flash this in.
Absolutely.
Because it's instant speed. And then you use your soldiers to take out their mana sources. Now you've got this army and they're just sitting there wide open.
Yep. It's on my
like
turn.
A really
it's
bad, turn. Like a bad Creed song, arms wide open.
Yep.
So, the next one's Midnight Haunting. It's kind of more of the same. It's going to be for one color, or excuse me, for one planes and two colors. You get an instant. You put in 2/1/1 white spirit tokens with flying onto the battlefield. The next one is going to be Gather the Townsfolk. This one's not going to be instant, so you don't get to play upon that, you know, that reactionary or that fast type of thing that we were talking about before.
Yep.
However, this card's very serviceable. Both of these I do run in my horror cube, although not with opposition, again, to be clear.
Yes. Now,
well, for a couple of reasons. One, it's super powerful, and two, even though the two old men look really angry, they don't look scary. I mean, fighting on a beach isn't going to make it into that genre.
I think we're both young enough that we shouldn't be finding old men scary at this point.
Yeah, fair enough.
Let's just get that out there.
All right, so the next one I'm going to let Stu cover, and we'll explain why this is in here.
Enlightened Tutor. One white. Search your library for an artifact or enchantment card. Reveal that card. Shuffle your library and put the reveal card on top of it.
And I'm not sure what enchantment you'd be looking for. Perhaps, I don't know, a good idea would be like opposition maybe in your opposition
maybe.
Deck.
Maybe. Or maybe I've already got opposition.
This card's one of those
well,
ones.
Well, then I'm getting Winter Orb.
Sure, you'll get Winter Orb, but then you're getting rid
okay. You are not having
that is
fun
disgusting.
Today.
That is disgusting.
No fun for you.
Yeah, it's just a good card to actually try to shove in there in the white color section. And then Lingering Souls, you know, this is a pretty, you know, famous card here. We're not going to go over this extensively. It's just more token generation. If you notice, white's been really good at making this level. So now we're going to go in some that are, I'm going to let Stu, or ask Stu, please, rather. I'm working on this, guys. Ask Stu, pretty please, can you read these cards?
So, and this is where I did touch on a little bit earlier that I do think there's some strong enough blue cards that you could quite comfortably make some serious waves.
I did
and
say
do
that.
Some damage in mono blue, right? So,
yes.
First of all, Whirler Rogue,
yep.
Right? Enter the battlefield, you get 2/1/1 colorless Doctor tokens. Tap 2 untapped artifacts you control. Target creature can't be blocked this turn. Maybe, you know, you're kind of battling yourself with whether
can't
or not
be blocked, can't be blocked,
because
the opposition does it anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. But
it still works.
It's great having a unique effect like that, right?
Right.
Maloku, the Clouded Mirror, for 4 colorless and 1 blue. Flyer, 2/4, legendary creature, Moonfolk Wizard. And for 1 colorless, you return a land you control to its owner's hand and put a 1/1 blue illusion creature token with flying into play.
You know, I
don't even need to worry about my land drops anymore.
I'm actually thinking about putting this back in my power cube. I know my buddy Chris Morse put it back in.
Ooh,
this card, I just love this card, man. I actually still run this in my La Femme Fatale. This card will get you dead. I mean, this is one of those cards that's kind of a fun ending. I mean, you can do all kinds of nutty stuff with this. It's not just about making the illusions.
I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm not quite sure this is vintage.
It's pretty good. It's definitely aged. It's aged.
It's cool effect.
It's a flying 2/4 for 5, which is definitely not... It's still fun.
It is.
It's fun. Sometimes,
there's a lot of fun cards.
Sometimes just because I say powered vintage doesn't mean it can't be fun too, Stu.
Yes, that's absolutely right. There's no fun in vintage. Okay? It's all or nothing. And the last one, Murmuring Mystic. I mentioned this earlier. It's a 3 colorless, 1 blue, 1/5.
Yeah.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
Right? Difficult to get past. 1/5 human wizard, when you cast an instant or sorcery spell, create a 1/1 bluebird illusion creature token with flying, similarly to the way that Talrand's got.
Generally, you won't find this in your highest power environments just because of what it is, but it's amazing. That's kind of gets in this weird thing, like, hey, why are you guys talking about this with lower power cards? But I just wanted to create some diversity out there in the world and let people consider this for their own environments and maybe something you can do. And if you have enough, like we said before, enchantment, removal support, etc., you can actually probably make opposition into a fun card.
Yeah,
I am not going to sign off that, though. I will not sign a waiver. We'll get legal.
Look, this, I would agree.
This card's powerful.
It's an uncommon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, again, lower power cubes. maybe with a ton of token support.
Sure.
Maybe you just want to build a cube with a ton of these effects and just give everybody an opposition at the
some
start
weird,
of the game.
Some weird tappy nonsense.
Yeah.
And then we actually were going to move out of the blue section, but one we didn't mention was actually Talran, the Sky Summoner.
Yeah, I mentioned that at the end of that. So it's another token producer.
It was just one of those things, like after the fact, you know, Stu and I hanging out, having a beer or two or three, and then we're talking about like cards that would actually be well-equipped to go in there in the blue section. It was a whole little mini debate that we had back and forth, and then as you just saw, though, and this is my opinion, those cards we just jammed in there weren't ideal.
They're not.
That was my point. And they had a hard time fitting in my powered environment as per our conversation.
I would agree. And this goes all the way back to when you talked about not only has someone got to win, but if you're playing this card, I always kind of feel a bit of a responsibility that if I am playing a deck like this, I need to be able to win. I need to demonstrate that I am able to close the game out and not just be locking the game down until everybody's falling asleep. So, you know, something that is allowing you to lock the game down like that is fine, but I also want to be, you know, I want to be getting the game done.
Now we're going to move over to our next section, and it'll be our black cards that support this idea.
Yep.
And some of these are going to be more optimal than others. We'll start out with Bitter Blossom. For one swamp and one colorless, you get a tribal enchantment fairy. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose one life, and you put a 1/1 black fairy rogue creature onto the battlefield with flying. I said that backwards, but you get the point.
Doesn't need a whole lot of introduction.
No, it doesn't. This is just you can either you're attacking with these fairies or you're using them during their untap step to make sure you tap them down again before they move forward.
Anthony has been trying to acquire my unopened secret lair, Bitter Blossom Dreams, for a long time.
And now he's letting it go up in price.
It's not cool,
and I just need it. All right, and then we've got the next one, and this one I'll explain why I put this on the list, and although not ideal, this card is I don't think this card gets as much love as it used to. It's got this sick secret air art.
The art is beautiful.
Amazing. It's Pack Rat. And for one black and one colorless, you get a creature rat. And Pack Rat's power and toughness are each equal to the number of rats you control. You can pay one black and two colorless, discard a card, and create a token that's a copy of Pack Rat. So they just get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? And then where I see opposition in this one is less in that discard feature, more of using it as, and I keep saying the Gideon's Lawkeeper, but because these don't have evasion, although they will become overwhelming. You could use theoretically do this like in a Dimir shell, and you could move cards out of your way so that your Pack Rats can get through using one, the smallest Pack Rat.
I was going to say that kind of feels to me like a really intuitive way to use opposition. Yeah. In the deck where you have Pack Rat, right? Those Pack Rats, I will say that even without opposition, I think Rat is not as powerful maybe as it once was, but it still can be just a complete game changer, right? And like you said, you just keep tapping down.
You got the one that you have the one
you're winning.
You have the one that also has summoning sickness, right? Because you've just made that fresh Pack Rat, so that's kind of how we're going to move through
exactly.
That.
So next one we're going to cover, this is a really flexible card, and I love it in decks like this, but I think it's such a lockdown piece, and it's Ophiomancer, 2 colorless, 1 black for a human shaman, 2/2, and at the beginning of each upkeep, if you control no snakes, put a 1/1 black snake creature token with death touch onto the battlefield.
Right.
Not really as intuitive in the whole upkeep part of things, right? No. Your opponent's upkeep, because having a 1/1 with death touch on the battlefield really can be very, very powerful. I'm probably less on this card as an opposition card. I know you are getting that 1/1.
I'm only death putting touch some of these,
and I know it creates tokens.
It creates tokens. That's literally all I got. I don't have anything else. Anybody's listening out right now, just getting like losing their minds. It's only because if I were playing opposition, it would not be. This is not the ideal shell. I'm going to go back to the ideal shell is Simic. Or some form of singer, or we can even say Selesnya, but it starts getting really reachy when we're doing this thing.
Well, Selesnya is green white, so we'll go with Simic.
But if not every draft is perfect, right? I mean,
that depends who's drafting.
No, it's not just that. For example, I'll use a recent example.
It's never perfect.
Yeah. So, like, if we're in an 8-man draft or 8-person draft, excuse me, then everybody has a chance to see all the cards. Whereas, like in some of these 1v1 draft styles, like Glimpse drafting or Winston drafting, especially Winston drafting, you don't get the access to all the premier stuff, but yet you must still build a jank deck. And I'm actually going to show you this after we're done with this pod, how to go through. The deck won't be perfect, but in that case, if I had, Ophiomancer, and I had an opposition, and then I'm going to go ahead and build a deck, try to build a control shell around it. I mean, it kind of becomes like a sealed type thing, less of a draft. I get it. But that's why I'm mentioning this stuff. So just kind of open everyone's mind so there's more out there than just Simic.
That's reasonable.
It spreads it out.
And similarly, we also don't have to go too much into this, but with something like Sedgemoor Witch, right? Another effect where you get to, you know, repeatedly create tokens. Not a bad thing for opposition.
Same thing with Grave Titan, for example, right? Because you're putting those two black zombies on the battlefield whenever it enters the battlefield and also when it attacks. Those two particular cards, they have summoning sickness at the time, right? Or. And then you can use those in an opposition strategy. Probably you would use those even less because this is a six drop.
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a reach.
Well, it's not a reach, it's we're trying to now get through because all it has is death touch. It doesn't have evasion. That's when I thought about these cards, I was trying to think about every scenario at which I'd use this. Not every one of them is going to be during that untap upkeep stage, right? Some of these creatures need to be bulldozed over. And if I had an opposition in the shell and I curved up to a Grave Titan, and people are probably again going, ah. But my point is that you want to get their stuff out of the way so you can win the game. We're trying to close out and finish.
And you are trying to slow the game down typically, right? So you should expect that, especially if you're just building straight up Dimir, then, you know, if you've got even a little bit of assistance on the mana side, sure, like a Marx or whatever, then getting to six mana when you've been denying your opponent any kind of resources or the ability to swing with creatures, six mana shouldn't be too difficult.
Right. And the Dimir shell, granted, they're both double pipped up, so I'm not going to sit here and even argue that. I'm just saying this is not the perfect scenario, but it is a scenario that you could run through, right?
It's a card that creates tokens.
Right. And then there's more of the same here. We're going to go through the red section, and we've talked about this person ad nauseum, and it's going to be Young Pyromancer. Why could you not be printed as a female for my La Femme Fatale? And oh my gosh, that would have been amazing. And then Goblin Rabble Master. Those have haste. I don't even know why I listed this. You're going to attack with Goblin Rabble Master, but anytime you're holding back anything from that, you could use it. Again, this is super reachy. I'm just saying, if you had opposition on the field, these token generating cards are not awful. Young Pyromancer will be significantly better in this story opposed to Goblin Rabble Master, which I wish I had not included in the list, but there it lies.
You know what? I'm going to give it to you, though, because, again, you've always got some flexibility, right? Yes, Goblin Rabble Master by itself would rather that you're attacking with all of your goblins.
But you don't want to run into something and die, and it says it must attack if it can each time or if able, and opposition will allow you to take it down.
Exactly.
That's where my brain was at. I'm not crazy.
And listen, you're crazy. Creating the goblin at the beginning of combat.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Got a goblin. Tap down your blocker.
Sure.
I would hope that I've been able to, or let's, you know, speculate on the fact that I've been, you know, able to create a couple of goblins already on previous turns.
It's that duality of the card.
Maybe I'm swinging for four. How many turns do you think you need to swing with a four power creature?
Not very many.
I'll give you a hint. It's five.
No, well, I got life gain on my side of the fence, bro.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. All right,
I've already found a sword.
I've already lost. All right, and then Hanaware Garrison, more of the same. Like, the gist is, as we go through these cards, most of those were straight up, you know, token generations. There's Siege Gang Commander. There's Pia and Kirin Nalar. And then, as we said, for support cards, when you're running if I was doing this as a token shell, there are some very specific cards that I'm not only going to rely on opposition, but I'm going to try to punish on the front. I want to think a little wider span. So I don't want to just sit there and, I don't know, drop Young Peasy out and then hope that I'm just going to sit there and use them to tap you down. If I was building this deck and I was having time to do it, I would have the Goblin Bombardments, which is basically for one red and one colorless, you get an enchantment, sacrifice a creature, Goblin Bombardment deals one damage to target creature or player. Or even better in this scenario would be Purphorus, God of the Forge, for a 6/5, indestructible, legendary enchantment creature god.
I feel like they're a little bit win more, but I want to win more.
Let me have it. I don't get this every day. I need to win.
You stole that. I love that you said that because that's what it's exactly. Sometimes I want the win more because,
I want it.
You know, I just want to win more.
I want to lock it down. There's some days where I've had a bad day on a Friday and I want to play that. All right. So we're going to kind of move into the what plays a little better, right? We're going to move into the things that participate cleaner with this idea. And that we talked about before, it was Simic, right? Because of the two color, basically two islands and the two colorless of opposition in itself is going to create this problem where you need to branch out. So now I would probably splash in some rampant growths and stuff like, because blue's not really good at ramp outside of its rocks.
Right.
Right. So two fantastic support cards in here, and these are both in my two at a giant cube, are Deranged Hermit and Deep Forest Hermit. These are both two lonely individuals that seem to have not found one another out in the woods running around with squirrels. I mean, it's like if you it's like a bad dating app as I'm looking at these side by side. But anyways, what you get for Drain Charmin is for two forest and three colorless, you get a creature elf with Echo. And it's you have to pay the cost again at the beginning of the next upkeep, or you have to destroy it. When Deranged Hermit comes into play, put 4/1/1 green token squirrels onto the battlefield, and all squirrels get +1/+1. The other one's going to be kind of similar, but with Vanishing, same mana cost.
Same effect.
Going to be a lord. But what you want of this is your squirrels now are the tap mechanisms that you feed into opposition.
Exactly.
And then you just go nuts.
It's pretty obvious.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah, and it is pretty obvious, obviously. If you have the opportunity to get this much pressure out and have that much resource denial on your opponent,
yes,
this is going to make the game
very,
very
difficult.
And these
two are the most glorious ways to win a game of opposition in my mind.
You know what? I'm gonna basically say that any card that has any evidence of a squirrel on it is just gonna be a favorite for Anthony. And you know what? I'm very supportive.
And also,
of this.
I think these cards actually make it a little easier for your opponent. To go, yeah, okay, cool. I got killed by squirrels. They're not really mad about it, right?
I'm not talking about the time I got killed by squirrels.
They're not gonna go home complaining to their family. No. What happened today? I got killed by squirrels.
I was busting into my bedroom at night, telling my wife about all these squirrels that attacked me.
No. Anthony killed me with squirrels. All right, so then along the squirrel idea, because I'm gonna go nuts now.
It's just that. Squirrels.
You let
everywhere.
Me do it. You let me do it.
It's
all right,
just squirrels.
We got some squirrel nest, and for two forest and one colorless, you get an enchant land. Enchanted land has tap. Put a 1/1 green squirrel token onto the battlefield. It's an aura. Or you get Verdant Command, which also is going to make squirrels, spoiler alert, because I love me some squirrels.
Squirrel.
And it's going to be for one forest and one colorless, you can choose two for an instant. Target player creates two tapped. Oh, it says tapped. That one's not as good for this, but we're going to let it go. Two tapped 1/1 green squirrel tokens or counter target loyalty ability of a planeswalker. Exile target card from a graveyard. Target player gains 3 life. Now, these are powered.
Look, I'll agree. It is an instant, but I'm giving you this one because it's a squirrel.
And I run this in a 2-headed giant cube. And you know,
you should have renamed this episode. We're not going to call it opposition or opposing the opposition.
Squirrel position.
It's squirrel position.
Yeah.
Opposing the squirrel.
Stu made a mistake here and he allows me to make the show notes. So we'll start with that. And so until he gets to do that, there won't be so many squirrels. The next one's going to make sense. And I'll let Stu do this one, please.
Yes. Elvish Mystic.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
But
I need a break from the squirrels.
Chatterstorm.
Yeah, Chatterstorm. All right, cool. So Chatterstorm is pretty sweet. And for one forest, one colorless, you get a sorcery. Create a 1/1 green squirrel creature token with Storm. Now, the funny thing is, I have, again...
Incredible pauper card. Let's just put that right out there.
It's disgusting.
Is it banned in pauper, ?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
No.
Something got banned in the Chatterstone deck, I feel like.
It was the Enablers. It was the Mana Rock.
Was it First Day of Class?
It was the Mana Rock. It was the Snow Rock or whatever. I don't know. I don't keep up with that stuff.
Pauper people, let us know on Twitter, because I remember watching this deck getting played, and it was nuts.
So when I'm... Yeah, it was disgusting. I think I actually saw Caleb Gannon
was playing.
He was running. It was so gross.
Yeah, he had a couple of videos on this, and I'm like, this should not be legal.
Disgusting. But as you've noticed, though, I've named a bunch of cards that are extremely powered down, again telling everyone not to run opposition into a non-powered down environment.
Yep.
But that is a buyer beware type of situation, and
I agree.
There may be environments out there can totally handle opposition, and then I just want to unlock the power of opposition while talking about squirrels at the end of the day. That's what I'm going to rename this episode.
Yeah, and again, this can be referenced on multiple of our episodes, and also just sort of evaluating it based on what we've seen here. But when you're looking at your cube, you've got to think about all the speed of all the strategies, right? All the archetypes. And as soon as you allow one or two different combinations to just completely skew the speed of the rest of the archetypes, that's where I feel you're going to run into
some
problems.
Just kind of, inadvertently made this into an innocuous Commander episode. But it is what it is.
Or into an innocuous, don't run this in anything but a vintage
power
cube.
Yeah, just run
in
power cube, and then we'll go from there. You can do this. You can do this in not. It can be an unpowered, but it needs to be high powered.
Would you like your cube games to last 3 hours? Build a cube where everyone gets an opposition.
There you go. Enjoy. So let's go into a card that actually hates opposition and loves it at the same time. And this card, it's been covered a lot, actually. A lot of YouTubers have covered this, etc. This is not a secret at this point, but it's going to be Pest Infestation. And for one forest and XX, you get a sorcery. And it's the sorcery says, destroy up to X target artifacts and or enchantments. Create twice X11 black and green pest creature tokens. When this creature dies, you gain one life. So
this is, I'm going to put this right out there now. This is one of my favorite cards that's been printed in a while. I'll put this so high. And definitely, I don't want to always reference EDH. I think in an EDH environment, it can be very, very powerful. But I think in Cube, especially a vintage Cube, it's just so strong.
Oh, yeah. The guys from Sully Singleton talked about this one, and they did a really great job with it. And MTG Chill did a really great job with it. I mean, this card's beautiful. And the fact that you don't have to actually
We're so lucky we have so many great content
creators. There's an amazing amount of... You guys are just crushing it. But there is... no need a target for this. So I mentioned this in opposition is, again, it's a very secret Simic card, and this just happens to play into that threshold. The next one we'll do, and we talked about before, was Eternal Witness, just because.
Does the job.
And it just does what it does, because the spent ETBs was part of the process that we had discussed.
Yep.
And then here is how you win with all these little tiny do-nothings. And it is the Craterhoof Behemoths of the world. And we're going to talk about that right now. Craterhoof Behemoth for 3 forest.
5 colorless.
That was really cool.
Not squirrels.
Yep, not squirrels. You get a beast. And I don't have this cool little alternate art that I have up here right now that was drawn by the, I think it was Make-A-Wish Foundation, which is actually gorgeous. It was. And I feel bad for not doing that, but that is gorgeous. I missed this one. It's a haste creature for 5/5. When Craterhoof Behemoth enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain trample and get +X/+X until the end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control.
Again, probably another card that really doesn't need a whole lot of an introduction.
If you play Commander, if you play, I don't know, anything. This is
a cube. Look, this is a legacy elf staple.
Yeah.
It's a cube staple, certainly in a vintage
environment.
It's
just a way of.
It's so good.
You know, there's a lot of other options here for you, too. I mean, you could use, what's the changeling where you can, you know, +X/+X them. I mean, or you can use the razor, whatever, the boars that run side by side.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, all these things have options. Or you can just use overrun, right? I mean, it's because you're in green, you're Finale. Ramping, you've got opposition on the so field, you've been locking down the resources, so in a nutshell, what we've discussed with opposition and just beating this card to death by calling it an archetype is it's interesting. It's a weird control shell. It's a secret Simic card, but can play well with others.
I think it's flexible. It's really, flexible, really flexible. Yeah. It's flexible. It allows you to have that early tempo strategy. It allows you to maybe completely lock the game down in the mid or the late game. Again, yeah, I would agree that it does pair well, really well with the Simic strategies.
Anything and Selesnya, that allows you. I should have given Selesnya a little bit more credit.
Well,
but when we start getting up into powered environments, I have observed that the tokens start going down the scale as far as the white is concerned, unless you're using spent ETBs on. Right. The new doggos or whatever you may be running in your environment, but this card is powerful, and we will put the cautionary tale of buyer beware. I mean, you have to. We've kind of covered the feel bads on the other side of the table.
Not
this,
a card to just dump in a
no. Don't just like put it in there and hope nothing bad comes from it. So we're gonna go over a few. That's a few shout outs because that's kind of we've taken one card and we've kind of beat it to death ad nauseum at this point. One of your favorite cards ad nauseum. We've discussed this.
Yes.
All right. So for our shout outs, we can't continue to give enough love to our good friend Jordan Eckenrode. He's the MTG CubeTuber. You can find him. We'll have him up on our show notes. Good stuff. We've got some good friends over the Geeks That Craft. And these guys, or excuse me, my neighbors, husband and wife team, are crushing
it the wouldn't game. Even matter if they lived on and the other
side. I think
side
I've
of
actually
world.
Done them a disservice because it's Wind Geeks Craft. So I have done that, but I apologize. But I'm going to send over their link to their YouTube channel. They have done this amazing. They do stained glass art. They're doing 3D printing. They just got this. They got this stuff on lock, and it's really cool. I've talked about before. They've made multiple Skyrim maps, which are
the
gross.
Skyrim maps are absolutely
and I have been,
insane.
And I'm telling Stu something now. I have been chatting with them about doing a particular custom MTG thing, but I'm going to keep that secret for right now. But that's...
My wife does that.
That conversation is happening.
What's the teaser all about?
I'm not going to tell you. Maybe later if you give me enough beer. All right. And other than that, I'm going to let Stu... we're going to remove that from my vernacular. We're going to ask Stu to please...
Stu's just going to do the socials.
How about Stu just get on there
and... All right. So, again, I will echo what Anthony said. Thank you so much to all of our listeners, to everyone who's listened to all of our previous episodes and hopefully this one. We thank you guys so much. We appreciate you guys' time. Please feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at UberCubeMTGPod. Hit us up via email at ubercubemtgpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, we really appreciate if you guys would give us a 5-star review on your favorite player. Drop us a comment, share us out on the socials. And we want to get the content out there to, you know, MTG enthusiasts, cube enthusiasts. Absolutely. And keep getting the word out.
And we're also building up that Discord. In addition to, it's in works. I'll be launching very soon, if not already done by the time this episode comes out.
Yep.
A Patreon that I'm working on right now that'll have rewards and stuff that'll pertain directly to Discord interactions, etc., because we want to get the community involved. And I'm also working on, and again, this is future Anthony speaking, but past Anthony may be involved if by the time this happens, is we're also working on merchandise, or at least we've got some cool ideas, right?
Yes.
Stu and I are in our late 40s, early 40s. We're somewhere in there.
Yeah, early 40s.
And we've had ideas for 40 years at this point, so we're ready roll them out and unfurl them. So this isn't new to us so much. We're both in a kind of a marketing type
idea. And everything's just going to be for supporting the channel, right? We're very fortunate that we've been able to... You know, get this started and have equipment and have the time.
Someone walks by and goes, "Hey, what's that cool t-shirt? Oh, this is UberCube. Oh, what's that?
Check out the QR code.
No, how about you come over and play my game? It's called a cube. I don't care about the podcast. Let's start rocking some cube, dude.
That's right.
And get some beers. All right. Other than that, Cube and I, also known as Stu.
Stu and I. Antoinette and I.
Antoinette. we are outie.
Thank you very much again.
Peace out. Happy Cuban, guys.
Peace out. Happy Cuban.
Happy Cuban.